in studio right now, who can't, now can she hear in her head? Oh, the lovely, talented, funny, genius comedian, Mischna Wolf, who I happen to know intimately.
Yeah.
Can I say I'm married to you? Is that allowed?
Sure.
Because I know sometimes...
You do every day. It's all you talk about.
What are you talking about?
It's all you talk about.
What, because I say, do you love me constantly?
No. Just on the air. Don't you... It seems like you talk about me a lot.
It boosts his career.
Yeah. Are you kidding me? That when I took you to my high school reunion, that made everything worthwhile.
Thank you.
That was awesome.
Thank just you.
You're like a trophy to him. Go ahead, ask her something.
No. I think that would fit if only you knew what we go through at home. Because, a trophy, theoretically, the trophy model, the trophy idea that doesn't really talk and has no personality. Mischna, on the other hand, is definitely wearing the pants. You understand?
But that's not true.
All right, you're wearing half the pants.
Half the pants.
Yeah, we're doing one leg each kind of
deal.
Yeah,
one leg.
Yeah. So, Wolf, what you want to tell people about your show?
Yeah, I'm doing a show at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater.
Yeah.
Which is a fun, snazzy place where all the hip kids go.
Yeah.
And it's called I'm Down, My Life with Black People.
August 4th?
July 28th.
Really?
Uh-huh.
And way to pay attention.
July 28th and August 4th. That's coming right up, huh?
Wow, are you ready?
I will be.
So why don't you tell the people a little bit about what does that mean, my life with black people?
Well, my dad, when we were growing up, my dad thought he was George Benson.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And we grew up in this like all black neighborhood. And my dad really, thought he was black.
Yeah.
And my sister, really thought he was she was black. And
yeah.
They were really integrated into this neighborhood. And then I was just super, really, really white.
Yeah, you were like a nerdy metal girl.
I was like nerdy metal girl. But even, before that, I was trying to be down. And I just could not seem to integrate at all. Like, even, I remember the first time my little sister called me a cracker, whoa, who set you on here?
And your sister, could not be whiter, really.
She couldn't, but she just was always sort of integrated into this community. I mean, we would go to Black Baptist Church every Sunday, and she just loved it. She would raise her hands to the air and cry for Jesus.
Yeah.
And she'd walk around the house singing, Jesus loves me. And
she's sort of cycling out of that now.
A little bit.
I'll never forget when you and I were first dating and we were having a fight on the phone and your sister gets on and I could literally hear her head nodding as she was yelling at me, you are not talking to my sister. I'm like, what is going on here? Who is this person?
You could hear the neck roll.
Yeah, the neck roll. That's
you,
what
you
I was
referring. You can. Yeah, yeah, no, it's funny. But my dad, it's mostly about my dad and he's a pretty funny character. He used to Afrotech everything in our house.
Yeah.
And just everything was jerry-rigged. Every drawer had a special trick to opening it, and to use a phone you had to stay perfectly still.
Yeah.
And he had his Mona Lisa was this van, and this was a cargo van he used to transport four small children in.
Yeah.
And you needed a bent coat hanger to get in and out from the door, and the back doors were kept together with wire.
And there was some cinder blocks with a plank on it to sit down in the back.
Better milk crates.
Oh, great. All right, so stay with us. Mischna Wolf is here. We've got Lon Friend coming in to talk rock and roll. Misha's going to stay here because she's a rock and roll specialist. Stay with us.
And now, Mark Maron and Mischna finished the joke.
It's turned into a complete party atmosphere. The spine is broken out of the radio show. So we're going to talk to Lon Friend, who is here. We're playing this song in his honor.
You're going to be wearing some ink before the end of the day.
Okay. And Wolf, we were talking about her dad's van before we cut away to break. And we didn't quite get to the story where you were. Who was in the car with you guys?
It was the babies, which were his second wife, who was this black woman named Michelle. She had two kids, Mikiel and Michonne.
Yeah, and so you're all sitting on the milk crates in the back of the van.
We're all sitting on the milk crates in the back of the van, and my dad stops too fast, and one of the babies falls out of the milk, off of his milk crate, slides down the inside of the van, out the back doors, which were only kept together with the wire, you see, and he. hits the pavement in the middle of traffic, so he gets up and starts chasing the man in traffic, screaming, "Don't leave me, you guys! Don't leave me!" And my dad's got road rage, so he doesn't notice the baby's chasing us for half a block. He's in the front of the van cursing. Finally, the baby catches up with us, and he's all pissed off. He's like, "You guys were going to leave me."
And where is that baby now?
I
don't know. I just thought I'd ask.
Works at Bear Stearns.
I don't know.
So that is, Misha's going to be doing I'm Down July 28th and August 4th. On August 4th, I'm going to be doing the show
after
you.
The show afterwards, huh?
So we'll have a big double bill. But they're all going to come to see you. I'm just trying to work out some stuff. Folks, if you weren't familiar with the seminal RIP magazine, is that what you called it?
I didn't give it that name.
Okay. It was probably as important as Rolling Stone from the mid-80s to the mid-90s when bands like Guns N' Roses, Nirvana, Metallica were riding the wave of rock success. The editor of the magazine was Lon Friend. His new book, Life on Planet Rock, gives a first-hand look at a rock and roll life lived with candid encounters with a whole crew of a whole strew of rock gods: Nirvana, Metallica, Bon Jovi, Aerosmith, Alice Cooper. And we're talking on the break that you were on a bus with Jimmy Page.
Oh, boy.
Who was on that bus?
Jimmy Page, Steven Tyler, Joe Perry, and John Kolodner, the A&R guru from Geffen Records.
What the hell were y'all doing riding a bus in England?
I was just another journalist on the trip, but I arrived at the hotel to say hi to the guys. I had met Aerosmith earlier in the year, and Steven comes out of the bus, out of the hotel, and says, "Get on the bus. You're riding with us." I said, "I am." "Who am I riding with?" "Me, Joe, John, and Jimmy." And I looked at, I go, "Jimmy?" And out comes Jimmy Page from the revolving door.
Nice.
And
oh, my God.
And hair, you know, the hairs were up on my arm. And I went, okay. So, like, so much of my career, I just surrendered to the flow. And there I am for 4 hours, because it's a four-hour ride from London to Donington, the castle in the middle of nowhere where they have the Monsters of Rock Festival every
year.
Dude.
80,000 kids show up and, you know, drunk and tatted and ready to rock. And it was Whitesnake and Aerosmith. And on the road over, I'm watching them talk about Robert Johnson and Lead Belly and Muddy Waters and just listening to these amazing icons. And then about 40 minutes outside of London, Tyler looks at me and goes, "Lon, are you going to tell a story? You worked for Larry Flint, for God's sakes." So I said, "Well, I do have one story." And about 4 years prior, I was privy to observe these videotapes that were brought to me when I was editing Hustler magazine. And me and a fellow who you had on here recently, Alan McDonnell, he was an editor at Hustler, we worked together. I called him into my office to look at these tapes. So this guy from Missouri brought him in. And they were of Chuck Berry.
Yeah.
And we sat in rapt, nauseous attention, fixated by these videos of Chuck doing the most heinous things allegedly, to girls. And one of the scenes had to do with him, and I depict it as eloquently as I can in the book, where he swallows her breakfast, so to speak.
After it's been
digested.
Oh, man.
So I tell, but this is the reason, this is not a scatological tale. The reason is Jimmy Page loses it at the punchline.
Loses his breakfast?
No, he loses it and he laughs.
I can't imagine what that's like.
And anybody who, like, everyone on that bus knew Jimmy.
Yeah.
It's out of his character to just roll over and bust up. So he's losing it. And I become, for the next 20 minutes, the hero of the bus.
Oh.
As we're walking down the steps and all the kids are waiting and we're driving into the backstage area, his roadie opens up the bottom of the bus, pulls out that Hammer of the Gods Les Paul case that has played every riff known to man, and Jimmy looks at me and goes, "Lon, you want to carry me guitar in?" You talk about almost famous moments.
Nice.
And that was it. I was floating, man.
Isn't that wild though? Like when you're around your heroes, that something that, you know, they would pay, like, to carry someone's guitar. It's like, yes, I will.
Oh no, I was looked at like Jesus when I was walking into the site.
Yeah.
Like, what? I'm holding the Grail.
Yeah.
So this is a boring question, but how come so many albums are done at Donington? Like, I could have a whole Donington collection wing of my CD library.
Donington Yeah, Sharon Osbourne created the concept of the Rock Festival, of the Monsters Festival. It didn't really work in America until Ozfest, till she resurrected her own husband to go out and make the big to make the big cash.
Ozzy, get up!
Ozzy, we can do this in America, but you have to perform.
I don't want to perform anymore. We have millions of dollars. Our children will get all messed up and have to go to rehab.
It doesn't matter. We need a bigger house and more maids.
Anyway.
And a TV show on MTV.
But her father was like a huge producer, manager, right?
Yeah, he was big.
Yeah.
I mean, she was born into it. But Sharon was truly a visionary. She used to manage artists like Lita Ford. I mean, before, she always had Ozzy, but she had other acts. And this concept of having a festival in England, it's genius because the punters over there live for the gathering.
Right.
They don't judge you on your hit single or your image. They will go into the middle of nowhere. They'll find a way. They'll take trains and buses or hitchhike. And they will. And this is why Reading Festival and Knebworth Festival, why the U.K., all over Europe, they can gather the masses. It's just tribal there.
They come. Tribes come.
They come, man. It's
so
huge.
I was reading the part of the book. Like, I had the exact same reaction to Nirvana's Nevermind that you did. That when, but you got it before it really got huge, right? The CD.
Donington.
Did you?
The after party for the 1990 Monsters of Rock. There was this gig in London, and Metallica was throwing this private little gathering of just their English friends. And Kirk Hammett goes, "Lon, you heard Nirvana?" And I said, "Nope." And he pulls out this cassette with like four songs on it, which is an advance of what's coming out in a couple of months in America. And he plays me, and I hear Smells Like Teen Spirit.
And you're like, what?
And you have to be brain dead not to first get the riff.
Yeah.
But what's deeper is, this isn't like anything out right now.
Yeah.
Because don't forget, this is the moment in history where hair is God.
Right.
Scorpions, Motley, Whitesnake, Poison, Warren. You were bad. You still had a multi-platinum record on Billboard.
Yeah.
Because MTV embraced your follicles.
Embraced the hair.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And the ballad. Don't forget the power ballad.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if you had a power ballad, you got spins, it's done. Your record was platinum.
So this was complete shit.
Here comes Kurt, the Reaper.
Yeah. The death of hair.
The Reaper, man. He was.
Well, go ahead.
Can I ask, but what happened to guitar solos? Like, that was just like the end of guitar solos.
But that's
solos.
What's so great about metal is like, they were, prog rock led to metal because it was all about virtuosity and musicianship. Metal, you had the axes, the heroes.
Yeah.
These guitar players that could just do these shredding, magnificent solos.
Yeah, I listen to it all the time. I have to.
Grunge was a whole different thing.
Yeah.
It wasn't about that.
It was back to rock, swappy rock.
Yeah, there was nobody put on anything other than what they were wearing that morning.
That stuff was
on stage.
I remember when Teen Spirit came out, like, in New York. I was in New York at the time, and it was coming out of every window, everywhere. You walk down the street, it was like...
Now, it was in the ether, man.
That was such a sad part of the book where you're at a golf game with people that know... What is that story?
Okay, this is... First of all, every word in this book is true, and I don't know why I'm put in places where I am when things happen, but that's part of why I wrote a memoir, because, you know, who really cares about some of this stuff? But I guess fans care.
Of course.
I'm invited to play in this music industry golf tournament. I'm on the last dregs of my expense account, so I have, some of the biggest icons in the record business teeing it up at 9 o'clock in the morning in April of 1992, in April 1994, and I walk into the clubhouse at the Palatial La Quinta golf course. This is where Frank Capra wrote It's a Wonderful Life, out there in La Quinta.
It's in Pasadena, right?
No, it's out in the desert. It's just past Palm Springs.
Okay.
And all these guys are meeting for this tournament that Tom Wally, the president of Interscope, was throwing. And I look at, and there's David Berman, who's the head of business affairs for Geffen Records, and he's on the phone, and he's agitated. And I walk over to him. I go, "Hey, bud." And he shoos me away.
Yeah.
So I go out to the putting green and putt. 2 minutes later, Berman comes out. I was on the phone with David Geffen. They just found Kurt Cobain's body. He apparently committed suicide. And I went, "What?" Geffen's really upset, and this is going to be a bad day. And so I call my office, and I tell everybody, because I'm running a rock magazine, it's going to be on the wire soon. MTV's going to be over this. But Kurt Cobain's dead. He took a rifle to himself. This is like a really intense day.
Yeah.
It didn't stop everybody from playing their round of golf.
No.
including me, because I was so bought into that whole thing. Like, oh, I got to play golf with these guys because it's important to keep the relationships going.
Was that the first indication that maybe your soul was eroding?
Well, that, and then a year and a half later, I go to work for Clive Davis, which is the true Faust chapter.
I know a guy who just started working with him. What happened
when
you...
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was when you realized that you had actually met Mephistopheles? Like, you knew you were tight. It was one of those moments in your life where, like, this is a force of evil. What happened?
I don't consider him evil. I consider him unaware.
Okay.
And he showed me things, lessons.
Yeah.
Ego.
Uh-huh.
And the fact that rock and roll doesn't abide by any rules or scripts, which is why he failed in it for so long at Arista Records. But I was brought in all cocky. To like, oh, I ran a big rock band scene. I'm on MTV. I have a syndicated radio show. I can sign rock bands.
Yeah.
I signed one band.
Who?
The first week I was there. Band called The Bogmen from Long Island,
New
York.
I know The Bogmen.
You do not.
Yeah, I remember The Bogmen.
Wait a minute. Wait, isn't that Billy Campion?
Billy Campion's in The Bogmen.
No!
Yeah. We're friends with Billy from
Billy's,
New York.
Oh!
Billy and Chris.
You signed The Bogmen?
Billy is the biggest star I had ever seen that nobody ever knew.
He's
hilarious. He's one of the funniest people you'll ever meet.
He's making a very weird movie. I mean, that whole story is weird. And he now goes under the pseudonym of Vic Thrill. It's his alter ego character.
Oh, Mark. But what synchronicity that
right.
is.
but they started jamming with that Hasidic guy.
Yeah.
And Tina Fey bought the movie rights from Billy.
Yeah, that's Billy. He's hanging out in subways, busking and playing with homeless musicians for the last 8 years.
You know his brother Chris?
Of course.
Chris is outstanding.
Knockout Drops.
Yeah, the Knockout Drops.
They're like my family, man. When you look at
Chris is hilarious.
Is there a lesson?
They're both funny.
What is the higher purpose for everything? To fail at a record company, to not sign, or to get to know extraordinary people? They're like my children, this band, all of them. I talk to them all still, all the time.
Billy Campion's just a riot because you just never know he's going to show
genius.
Up. He's wearing upside-down glasses and maybe a dress going,
he's
hey, how's it going,
but
man?
You know, Clive loved him,
yeah.
And but we were just trying to sell them like they were a top 40.
Why the hell didn't they make it, man?
It's in the book.
Because he's still got a pretty good following. The Bogmen have a good following. I get Vic Thrill emails all the time. Hang out a minute, and we got one more segment, but why don't you hang out, and we're talking to Lon Friend. The book is Life on Planet Rock. Mishna Wolf's here. Jim's still here. There's a party going on in the booth. There's ice cream if you want to come down, but it'll be too late for the ice cream by the time this is on.
I wonder if he's still with that girl.
Let's wait till we get off. He might be with that girl. Let's call him. Go ahead, Jim.
That riff saved Mark's life in the desert.
That's yes.
right. I high-fived Axl Rose coming out of the Pink Dot on Sunset.
Nice.
Yes, that was my big touch, my big brush with fame and Axl Rose. It was one of those moments where I walk in, he's walking out, and for no other reason because I could, I went Axl, and he high-fived me. And then there was a time that I was with Sam Kennison and Tommy Lee in my bedroom at the out at the house behind the Comedy Store, and we were about to do some blow.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, I said, "What would every 15-year-old kid in this country want to do right now?" And I said, "Hey, Tommy, can we do the blow off the back of my Telecaster?" And he's like, "Yeah." So there we were. I was passing around my Telecaster thinking, I'm living a teenager's dream. Too bad I'm 30 and a loser. All right.
Were you at the Wild Thing shoot?
No. Okay. I was out by then. I had lost my mind on cocaine, and me and Sam had a falling out. So our...
But he's dead and you're here.
I'm still alive, and I've got an appointment to pee on his grave. Look, Lon Friend is here. Not so zen, me, but the
you
book
can't
is...
can't take me out of my space.
Life on Planet Rock. We've had a lot of fun. Mishna Wolf is here. Her show, August 4th and July 28th. I'm down at the UCB Theater.
8 o'clock?
8 o'clock, we'll get a dispatch on that. Tomorrow, we're going to be down at Democracy Fest at the San Diego State University campus. Howard Dean's going to be there. Robert Greenwald, Maxine Waters, Al Franken. And out of all those people, I think we're going to interview Jim Croce's brother. How the hell did that happen?
Wow.
I don't mind that.
That's
marquee.
Funny.
You know him? Jim Croce, that's way off of your radar.
Well, I loved Jim Croce when I was growing up.
If I could save time in a bottle.
If words could make wishes come true.
Okay, good. I'm glad we got that. But so
that's better than the first version.
Yeah, we're going live tomorrow night if we all make it. And we'll see who's going to be there. Again, Zoe and Pedro, thank you for the ice cream. We made it through this thing without freaking out on ice cream. Right now, these are Jim's picks, folks.
Hey, don't blame me. They're great, though.
Yeah, Jim picked the jokes today. So let's do the short order news. And Mishan, will you eat the Pop Rocks now? Zoe sent some Pop Rocks.
Okay. Wow.
Can I hear it on the mic, though?
Chandler Elementary School, 1967.
Oh, yes. Pop Rocks. Yeah, just keep that going if you can. Jack Kevorkian, whose failing health may deny him a chance to be paroled, said he still believes in assisted suicide, but would not choose it for himself. Kevorkian says he gets wistful for the old days, especially when he hears the long beep for the emergency broadcast system. You picked that one? That's good. Kevorkian is of Armenian descent. That's why he is the only prison. He's in the only prison with a fountain in front.
Nice delivery.
Okay. I didn't read him. Suicide is a big taboo in this country. The state that puts more people to death than any other developed country doesn't want people killing themselves unless it's a slow result of their food, air, and water. You wrote that one, didn't you?
No, I didn't write.
Oh. How's that Pop Rocks going? I think it's actually...
Wolf's killing herself right now. Yeah.
Where the hell's the other setup for this? Oh, police beefed up patrols around national landmarks Wednesday, a day after the District of Columbia's police chief declared a crime emergency in response to a string of violence that included the killing of a British activist. The crime has been so dangerous around Washington's famous landmarks, several men have experienced Vietnam Memorial War flashbacks. Vietnam Memorial Wall flashback. I don't even bother with this. How you doing, Wolf? You all right? Oh, no. Do you need water? Oh, stop it.
That's toxic.
Oh, you got Coke? Though. Coke and Pop Rocks.
Wow, that's great. So you're macro, huh? Right. It's good meeting you, Grizzly.
A lot of yin in the Coke.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, hold on. Japanese spouses can have their vows of love launched into outer space and stored there for the next year as long as they buy platinum wedding rings. Men love the idea since most see marriage as being sucked into a lifeless black hole.
So, did you watch Supergroup with Ted Nugent?
I live Supergroup. I was still living in Las Vegas, and I went to the house on two occasions.
Oh, man, that was the greatest show.
Great. Scott Ian's one of my oldest, greatest friends in the rock.
I got band. Anthrax tickets.
Totally.
About Anthrax tickets.
Dude, I'll hook you up for backstage.
What's happening?
I'm Mark Maron, and this has been the Pen Open show. Tomorrow we'll be live in
will you really
San
hook
Diego.
Me up with
that? So hooked.
The penultimate show.
Laminate.
It is penultimate.
Yeah.
Penultimate show.
She's laminated, dude.
I know. You
for
don't
Anthrax.
Tell me.
For Anthrax and Rob Zombie.
Who got you into that? Am I going to that? What the hell's going on,
Wolf? I'm going with Richard Potter. I asked you if you wanted to go.
How the hell does this happen? You're going on a date, and you've got laminates, and I'm not even... When is this
I'm
happening?
Going... I'll go, too.
Didn't
I'm sure you
hear
will,
me?
I'm taking Ellen, the documentary filmmaker.
Sure, take my wife, please. Did I just say that? Yeah?
Everyone needs a little metal.
Laughing Andy, Tina... Mark Grau, Kathy, thank you for everything you've done for us here. We're going live tomorrow. You guys have been great. Thank you, Juan.
Thank you.
Enjoy. We'll talk later.
Yeah.
Tomorrow live, San Diego. Good night, sheeple. All right, man.